Good morning again, guys. Welcome to those who are watching from home today. And we are going to be starting a new series today in the book of Philippians. We call the New Testament books, but this is actually a letter. It's a letter written by the Apostle Paul, a name that you will hear a lot in the New Testament and a lot from the pulpit as we're preaching. Paul's very quotable. It feels like Paul has written the majority of the New Testament. I was actually just thinking about this, but by words, Luke, just by virtue of his gospel and then the book of Acts, the volume of words that Luke has written is greater than that of Paul. But Paul has written almost half of the books of the New Testament, 13 of the 27. So here we are once again in one of Paul's letters, and it's a good one. The letter to the Philippians was written around 62 AD or so. This was just a couple of years before Paul's martyrdom. And he was most likely in a prison in Rome when he wrote this letter. And he's on trial. He's on trial at this point for his faith and for the disturbance that his faith in Jesus Christ had caused. And the purpose of this letter, as he writes to the Philippians, is to encourage them. We don't know all of the exact reasons behind it. We can infer things from the letter. There's probably a combination of things. One is just to encourage the Philippians that he is okay. They knew he was in prison. They knew that he was moving towards the possibility of losing his life for his faith, and so there was probably a little bit of despair encroaching on the Philippians. They loved Paul dearly, as we'll learn. Possibly Paul was writing to encourage them not only for that reason, but because their own persecution was escalating for their faith. But he's seeking to encourage them. And he does so in a very personal, conversational tone. When you read the letters, the epistles of in the New Testament, there's formal and informal letters. The formal ones are the ones that are highly structured. They seem to have kind of forethought to them, a point you know that the author is trying to get to that he does a really great job from start to finish making. Hebrews is probably a little bit more like that, which we went through last year. This is an informal letter. It's much more personal in its tone, conversational, like I said. I've heard Philippians and other informal letters described as theology in street clothes, right? So Paul isn't being super formal here. These are close friends. There's a informality that comes through in this letter, and it has to do with this unique bond that he shares with the Philippians. And a part of the reason for that, we learn about in Acts chapter 16, is Philippians, the church in Philippi, was the first church that Paul planted in Europe. And it's quite a memorable account. If you, I would actually just ask you, go back and read, when you have time this week, the chronicles of Paul in Philippi in Acts chapter 16. It's a very memorable. He wrote, or that took place at about 50 AD, so about 12 years prior to writing this letter. And there, one of the reasons why it must have been such a profound experience for both Paul and the Philippians is because there's no question that God had a heart for the people of Macedonia, that region, in particular the people in Philippi. Because what happens in Acts 16 is time and again we see Paul and his companions who are on mission being shut down and stopped by the Holy Spirit from going here or going there. And God is kind of like funneling them increasingly west toward Macedonia. And then it all kind of culminates in finally Paul having this profound vision of a man from Macedonia who comes to him and pleads with Paul to come and preach the gospel to them in Macedonia. And so Paul and Silas make their way finally to Macedonia, which is in modern-day northern Greece, and specifically to the city of Philippi. And the story gets increasingly incredible, in the best sense incredible. First, there's their first convert is Lydia, who is a prominent woman in Philippi. And then, so she's the first member of this church. And as Paul and Silas go around and they continue to preach the gospel, there's this slave girl who has a demon that's following them around. And of all things, she's saying, or the demon through her, "Servants of the Most High God, proclaiming to you the way of salvation," over and over again. We're told for several days she was doing this. And then it's pretty funny. I don't know. It says Paul was so greatly annoyed that he turned to this girl and he cast the demon out from her. You'd think that she was doing him some favors, but for whatever reason, he probably didn't want to Christianity to be associated with her and her behaviors. And so he casts out this demon. And this girl, actually, she was a slave girl, and her masters were making a lot of money off of her because of this demon. She was a fortune teller. She was able to know things that were going on around, and people thought, oh, wow, she's all wise and all knowing. I'm going to go to her for answers. Well, this demon's no longer present in her to be able to give her that information, and so they're angry. They take Paul and Silas. They throw them into the city center before the leaders and claim that they're making a disturbance and saying all kinds of false things and going against the Roman ways. And so Paul and Silas are then thrown into prison. But the story gets even crazier because while they're in prison, and by the way, they're singing praises to the Lord, and we're told that all the other prisoners hear them doing this, and that's important, I think, for what happens next. There's an earthquake, and the jail cells break open, and their bonds and shackles fall off, not just Paul and Silas's, but everybody who is in prison. And the prison guard, who had been sleeping, apparently, wakes up, sees all the prison doors open, and these prisoners just standing there without shackles. They're like, I'm done. And he pulls out a sword, and he's ready to kill himself. But Paul and Silas are like, no. Let me tell you why this has happened and the God is that's enabled this to happen. And so they preach the gospel to this jailer, and he comes to faith, and his whole family comes to faith. And apparently all the people who were in prison didn't leave. Maybe they came to believe in the gospel too. At least they knew, okay, there's something going on here that's supernatural. They'd heard Paul and Silas praising and saying praises to God and heard the testimony of Paul. And so this jailer and his family are the next members of this church. And then while Paul is actually dining with the jailer, who takes him into his home and cleans up Paul and Silas's wounds and feeds him, apparently the local rulers find out that Paul and Silas are Roman citizens. And it was a big no-no to take Roman citizens and to beat them and to throw them in prison without a trial, a fair trial. And so they're all bashful about that. And so they go and they apologize to Paul and Silas, and Paul and Silas stay for a little bit longer. They minister to this new fledgling church, and then they depart. So it's quite the account. It's an amazing, amazing story of God's providence and his power at work to bring the gospel to a new region as the gospel was beginning to advance westward into Europe. So quite the start, quite a bond that Paul would have formed with the people in Philippi and this church. And the Philippians continued then to share in the bond of advancing the gospel through supporting Paul with gifts of money for his missionary work. Now, in this letter that Paul, 12 years later, composes to the Philippians, there are two prominent themes. There are many, but probably the two that rise to the surface from all the different commentators, scholars, and just readers like you and I of the scriptures are humility and joy. And we're going to come across those themes again and again throughout this letter. Humility being very different than the world that puts such prominence upon self-esteem and thinking highly of yourself. Humility being, in a Christian sense, recognizing we have weakness, recognizing we have need, and that fostering in us a dependence upon God and a gratitude for his grace in our lives. And then the other theme being joy, and in particular, in the midst of suffering. Paul couldn't have been in any more acute circumstances of suffering, being in prison with his death, with his life on the line. And he knew, listen, all Christians are going to go through this. I'm in a prime position to be able to encourage the Philippians from my standpoint with the fact that I have joy even in the midst of these circumstances. And if I was to define joy for you, which I think is important, this is what I would say about joy as it differentiates from happiness. Joy is an inward contentment that isn't dependent on our outward circumstances. It's something that you can have regardless of what's going on outside of you. As opposed to happiness, which tends to be a reactionary emotion to feel good circumstances that are taking place in our life. And that's not bad. It's not bad to have happiness. It's just not the same thing as the joy that Paul is talking about here in Philippians. Joy, in a sense, is immune to our circumstances. And I think probably the best representation of this is Paul coupling together in 2 Corinthians sorrow and joy when he says, I'm sorrowful, yet always rejoicing. Those two things can go hand in hand. So since sorrow comes often from circumstances, clearly our joy doesn't have to be dependent on our circumstances. And so joy and humility are two main themes. We've kind of focused and honed in on joy, if we had to pick one, for kind of the title of this series, which you'll see up there. And the artwork that's up there, by the way, I'd mentioned this last week, but that's thanks to Sarah Gorse, who invested that time and energy into the artwork for our series in the Philippians. And I just want to be able, you'll find this on our website too, if you just go to terranovachurch.org, scroll to the bottom, you'll see that there's a little artist statement that you can read about for this artwork. But in the middle are these yellow chrysanthemums, a kind of flower that traditionally represents joy and hope. But then around the edges are these thorns and these thistles that are representing the curse that's trying to encroach upon joy, but can't ultimately because of what Jesus has done for us. And so represented in this artwork is this theme of joy in Philippians, where it's possible for joy to be found despite sorrow and pain and the thorns and thistles of this hard world and life that we live in. And it also represents the idea that there's work involved on our part to cultivate this joy. When we get to chapter 2 of Philippians, Paul will say, work out your salvation with fear and trembling. There's a part we have to play in working for good and working for joy in this life fallen as it is, this world broken as it is. And that kind of harkens back to the garden where after sin entered the world, Adam and Eve were cultivating and tilling this hard soil, this thorny ground in order for fruit to be yielded from that. And we have to do the same in our hearts. We have to work to create the space for God's life to flourish in us because we're constantly fighting back against the thorns and thistles of the world. But we have the power of Christ at work in us so that joy can ultimately prevail. And by the way, too, that you'll see that the subtitle for the series is Joy, but as an acronym, if you remember nothing else about Philippians at the very end, then you can remember this acronym, which stands for Jesus,